Get some perspective. Bruce St. James and Pamela Hughes. KTAR News on 92.3 FM.
Why? Why? Why do you hate the Waymo van, for God's sakes?
Who hates it?
Apparently, there are people out there, those people doing those things to those people.
Who are you calling people?
Because we now have dozens of police responses to acts of violence or vandalism towards self-driving vehicles, as well as Waymo, kind of the big one here in the Valley right now, and its own internal issues where they document people who are violent or aggressive towards self-driving vehicles and they don't call the cops.
So we've got rocks thrown at vehicles. Okay, you know what? Kids throw rocks at cars all the time. Okay. That doesn't strike me as threatening or harassing.
You kids today.
It is annoying. And yeah, you can go chase those kids if you want. But these are adults.
Hippity-hop music.
Okay, that's on the mundane side of it, if you will.
But you have people...
It gets a little bit more intense when you look at drivers who've been followed, who've had to pull into police stations because they've been followed for over an hour. You have one vehicle that was stopped at a light and somebody came out from a park and slashed a tire.
Who does that?
Another guy was he was behind the wheel. He wasn't driving, but he was behind the wheel of one of these Waymo vans when somebody pointed a gun at him from their driveway.
Yeah, literally, this person was holding a pistol as the Waymo vehicle passed by. According to the police, after they arrested this guy, he said his intention was to scare the driver in the autonomous Waymo vehicle by pointing a gun at him as he drove by his house.
Mission accomplished.
Yeah, to a certain extent. But why specifically and why uniquely them? It appears that some of these people have a grudge against the company itself.
But why?
Against Waymo.
But what's the grudge?
The only thing I can think of is they must be involved in some way, shape, or form in the transportation business, and they see this as a threat? Like they're going to lose their job to a self-driving vehicle? Tell me why. I genuinely want to know why you hate Waymo.
Is it a security concern? Because there is very little regulation for these types of technologies on Arizona roadways.
So you think you could become a victim of a self-driving vehicle that could run into you, your family, your car, and therefore...
I don't know.
I'm going to run out at the park and slash the tire as it drives by. It sounds like dogs that chase vehicles and bite at the tailpipes.
Yeah, what do you do when you catch one? That's the other thing, right?
Careful.
Exactly. It's strange, though. It's strange to me, and this was news... Because I had no idea this kind of stuff was happening.
Agreed.
And why would you know? Because a lot of times the company doesn't report it to the police.
For a variety of reasons. Right?
Here's something else I did not know. Drivers of Waymo, those test drivers.
Yeah.
They have a button inside the car that they can push. Which allows them to talk to, the company dispatcher without holding their phone.
And without dialing 911, without
and
getting the police
they
involved.
Often do this instead of calling the police directly.
Okay, so I'm gonna make a hard left here, okay? Going to make a 90-degree turn. Not calling the police. Waymo, specifically, we'll use this. Self-driving vans, not calling the police when they are attacked or vandalized, strikes me as, I had a friend that owned a bar. Follow me on this.
Okay, I'm trying, man. I'm trying.
And you have to have a liquor license to own a bar.
Yes, you do.
When your liquor license comes up for renewal, they look at how many times the police were called to your bar.
Yes.
So guess what? He was real hesitant to call the police. Like, you really had to do something big to get the police called to his bar, because even if he was completely in the right, even if someone was out of control or whatever, it still shows up on his record. Is Waymo concerned and under reporting all this? Because when it comes up for, well, so how did your self-driving vehicle test go in Phoenix? They went, well, we had to call the cops 1,200 times.
Company says that over the past 2 years, we found Arizonans to be welcoming and excited about the potential of the technology to make our roads safer.
I'm a welcoming.
We believe
excited,
a key element of local engagement has been our ongoing work with the communities in which we drive, including Arizona law enforcement and first responders. Uh-huh. Now, they say that these test drivers, they can call police whenever they want if they feel threatened. But a lot of times that doesn't happen.
Are they being discouraged?
I don't know. Here's another situation. Okay, because you asked the question, why, Bruce? And I don't think we're ever going to really get to the bottom of that quite yet. But okay. There was an instance in Chandler, I believe, where police were called because there was a guy, a 37-year-old guy, who was described as heavily intoxicated, had a couple adult beverages.
Okay.
He was standing in front of one of those Waymo vans, and he wouldn't get out of the way to allow the van to proceed. He said he was sick and tired of the Waymo vehicles driving in his neighborhood and apparently thought the best way to resolve this is to stand in front of the Waymo vehicle and not allow it to proceed.
So the other thing I can compare this to is like these anti technology. We talk about maybe if you're a taxi driver, you see a Waymo as a fundamental threat to your life. But these e-scooters that are everywhere, these battery operated scooters that cities are trying to ban. They're showing up on street corners everywhere. You go to Tempe Marketplace is a place where they're everywhere. When I travel, I just came back from California, absolutely everywhere in street corners and just sitting on the side of the road, these e-scooters. But there's also an issue with people vandalizing them for a variety of reasons. How about this? If you're an Uber or a Lyft driver, I thought about this. Do you see the e-scooters as a threat to you? So you got the taxi drivers that see the Uber guys as their threat. And then before they even got to that threat, there's already now a threat to the Uber guys. You see what I'm saying? Like this rolls downhill?
Well, you've got a lecturer at ASU, wrote a couple books on technology. And he said it's probably less about the drivers. Yeah, I don't think they're mad at the drivers.
I agree. Get me mad at the driver.
He claims, this is Phil Simon, that it's more about what Waymo represents. He says this stuff is happening fast and a lot of people are concerned that technology is going to run them out of a job.
Okay, yeah.
It's hard for middle-class people to celebrate technological breakthroughs like self-driving if they haven't seen their own wage go up or even decline in recent years.
And you're feeling anxiety.
And they're fighting back in this small, kind of stupid way.
Because we know there's technology all around us, from self-ordering kiosks at restaurants, getting rid of waiters or waitresses or even counter personnel. You have a variety of more things where you are able to conduct business in some way, shape, or form with a machine or a computer that used to take a person. You don't need that anymore, and that these people are feeling this anxiety that they are next. And so the way they're showing it, of all the things,
I don't think CEOs are the ones throwing rocks.
Right, but the Waymo van is the way that is your stand against the machine taking over? You think the Waymo van is Skynet?
Well, I mean, you know me, and if anybody has listened to this program for any extended period of time, they know that I have my own reservations when it comes to technology, how much freedom we're giving to developers out there of this technology, and the lack of regulation and privacy concerns I have when it comes to said technology, using that as a very broad term. All that being said, Bruce, this surprised me.
Meh.
I had no idea that people, I get when people are upset about self-driving cars, when one of the Ubers hits and kills somebody in Tempe.
Absolutely, I get
totally
that.
Totally get that.
But the response is, you're going to run out of the park at when the Waymo vehicle's at the stop sign and slash the tires?
Like,
how do we get from A to Z so fast?
Oh, man.
Yeah, well, Waymo.
Stay safe, Waymo drivers.
Yeah.
Stay safe.
Stop harassing machines.
I mean, come on, yo.
The machine doesn't care. And you know what? You tick off the robots enough and they're going to come after you.
That's
I'm just going to say that right now.
No, stop. Whoa, that's what they're afraid of.
The robots are going to take pictures of you and go, that's one that we're coming after. When we take over, that guy's the first one. I want robots to like me.
That.
Okay?
No.
I want them to like me. I'm on the robot side. Sesame Street has a new Muppet character. They've had a variety of characters, yeah. but this one has a bit unique. Will it help teach kids about homelessness?
Sunny days. Bruce St. James and Pamela Hughes.
It's Sesame Street, for goodness sakes. Was Sesame Street part of your growing up? Is it still a part of kids growing up? Is it? It's not nearly as popular as it once was because we didn't have any other channels.
Right. You know, variety kills kind of thing. There's so many different options out there for kids.
When I came home, I had to, it was PBS because everything else was showing soap operas and like I cared about that. So I come home from school and I would watch Sesame Street. But I was more of an Electric Company kind of guy. I'm going to throw that
you
out there right now.
You strike me as an Electric Company
Yeah, you know what? I just ooze Electric Company. Then I thought Electric Company was pretty dope. But Sesame Street has a new character out there, and the character is homeless. Now, can I start by saying, I thought Oscar the Grouch was homeless. The guy lives in a dumpster. He lives in a garbage pail. So would he be the second home? Or does, anyway.
Yeah, that's some deep thinking right there, my friend.
Isn't Oscar the Grouch? He lives in a garbage can. This is hardly palatial.
Yeah, supposedly, he has like a whole house down there in the trash can. Chad Benson was telling me this earlier. Apparently, he's like a Sesame Street aficionado.
Who knew? Of course, Chad Benson.
Oscar has like a mansion down there.
Really?
Okay. It's a facade. He's been hiding this from us.
Why doesn't he take Lily in then?
Because
Lily is the new Muppet who's homeless.
Okay.
And I don't get this.
What do you mean?
I don't get this. Riley, my daughter, watched Sesame Street when she was maybe 3.
Age appropriate.
4.
Okay.
By 5, she was probably onto like Bubble Guppies and Paw Patrol or something, right? And so I'm using it through my own filter because that's what I get paid to do. Why does a 3 or 4-year-old need to know about homelessness?
Well, according to the U.S. Administration for Children and Families, 1 in 20, what's the percentage of that?
5.
Okay. 5% of children under the age of 6 have experienced homelessness.
Okay. Again, why does a 3 or 4-year-old need to be aware of homelessness?
Well, I'm not going to claim that I still watch Sesame Street on a regular basis, but what I know about Sesame Street is that different characters are used to illustrate different issues, different situations that kids can be in, and give them the opportunity to not only relate to kids, but to tell a story.
Sesame Street is
predominantly for the good, right?
It's not
like an evil thing taking over.
I'm not saying it is.
Got it.
And when they have, you know, a Muppet who is challenged with some disabilities, I understand why that's there, because
Bert and Ernie,
you know, you're seeing somebody in the grocery store as a 3 or 4-year-old who is walking with some cane or crutch or whatever,
or in
it may
a wheelchair
be.
Or something.
Sure, it's something along those lines. I get that. I still don't understand the homelessness aspect of this.
All right.
And I'm not trying to be cold or anything. It appears to me like this is more for the parents than it is the kids. Because a 3, 4, 5-year-old, really, unless they are in the throngs of this, which there are 5% is way too much of our children who are battling homelessness in this country. But if you are battling homelessness, you're not watching Sesame Street.
I don't think it's
for
homeless
kids. No, neither do I.
I think it's for other kids to better understand that there might be kids in their school, there might be kids in their social group who have to live with friends or whose family lives in a car. And they're trying to humanize these people as opposed to make them mysterious.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't think that this is something that there was a need for. That's me.
Sesame Street says we want to. What we're doing is helping others have a greater empathy and understanding of the issue.
So you have Sesame Street, who has Lily,
the homeless child,
the homeless Muppet, and this is what you're hoping, you know, children are seeing when it comes to homelessness, which is probably something that a lot of the kids that are watching Sesame Street can't even fathom.
Okay.
Because they're not running into it. We're talking about 5%. It's too much, but it's not an overwhelming majority where a 3, 4, 5 year old would become aware
probably,
of this.
Probably a similar, if not larger percentage than some of the other unique specific issues. If you think about they've done Sesame Street has tried to address homosexuality in some ways. They've tried to address a variety of other things that may be a small segment of the population.
Yeah, I just I think that I'm not mad at it. I mean, they can do it. I'm just wondering what's the motivation for it. What's the motivation? You're like, greater empathy and understanding of the issue. Really? You think a 3, 4, 5 year old is going to have a greater empathy and understanding of the issue?
So when do you want them to start that?
Well, you know what? Riley and I have had conversations about this. She's 9. We've probably talked about it around, you know, 7. When she starts asking questions.
So you think
about
it's age appropriate?
It's not even just
for
age appropriate. I'm just
homelessness?
Wondering. No, I'm not saying it's necessarily age appropriate, because I think what the Muppets, what they're doing isn't inappropriate. There's nothing inappropriate
no, nothing
about
wrong
it.
With it. Fair enough.
I'm just wondering what's the motivation behind it, because when Riley asks me about the guy standing on the corner and mommy, why don't you give him money? Or when I'm at the gas station and I open the door and I say, lock the doors. And then a guy comes up to me and I'm really uncomfortable and he doesn't move and he stands in front of my vehicle and I have to back up and she's now scared. That's what she knows. Is that what they're trying to change?
I think what they're attempting to do, what they're attempting to do is to... Again, I think they're trying to have a different face of homelessness than those things that maybe you say. And the fact that there are homeless kids out there is a real thing. And that you shouldn't associate...
But is it more real today than it was when we were growing up?
I don't know if it's worse than it was.
Exactly.
But we also didn't talk about a lot of this stuff. And that if they can show Lily as a face of a homeless child, it's not only homelessness they see by the guy who's asking for change at the gas station. I don't see anything wrong with it. I agree with you.
Again, I don't think there's anything wrong with it. I don't think there's anything inappropriate about it. I'm just like,
Lily,
what's the motivation?
The homeless Muppet. Again, I'm still going with the second homeless Muppet behind Oscar the Grouch, who I obviously identify with on a lot of different levels. I thought Oscar was not there to represent homelessness or living in a garbage can, but just being a general pessimist, which is why I love him. Why is Phoenix experiencing more officer-involved shootings? We have the president of the Phoenix Police Officers Union, Ken Crane, joining us next to talk about that very subject.
Arizona's news station, KTAR News on 92.3 FM. Bruce St. James and Pamela Hughes.
Well, you know, it's been one of the stories circulating around there because it made the front page of the New York Times. I would always argue it's rarely a good thing to make the front page of the New York Times. It's one of those scary things like, hey, 60 Minutes is in the lobby.
Yeah.
Oh, God.
No good comes of that.
But it was a report, and it talked about the number of officer-involved shootings in the city of Phoenix. Now, we're not talking about the Valley. We're literally talking about the city of Phoenix. And it had reaction from a variety of people, including... one of our guests in studio right now, Ken Crane, is the president of PLEA, joining us. And we want to talk about this situation and understand a little bit better, at least coming from the police officers union. Ken, thanks for joining us.
Hey, Bruce, thanks for having us in here today. Appreciate it.
So you're quoted in this as well. And we had Chief Williams on about an hour ago and asked her some of these same questions. And I'll give you a chance for this. Councilman DeCiccio is one of the ones who made an argument that the citizenry of Phoenix proper is more violent or more prone to be violent towards police officers. Is that a statement you can agree with? And if so, help me understand it.
Yes and no. We got to be careful about painting with a broad brush. Are all
sure.
the citizens more? No, they're not. We got a lot of law-abiding people. The police department has to deal with that like 2% out there. It's the 2% that we deal with 95% of the time. That's how I like to put it to people.
You keep running in the same people over and over again.
Absolutely. And people don't call us to deal with law-abiding people. They call us to deal with lawbreakers and people that are threatening their safety. So, yeah, you know, I sat down and I interviewed with Mr. Otful of the New York Times. He came into the city. He was boots on the ground. He was going around interviewing people. We opened our doors to him at the police union. Britt and I here sat down with him in my office for an hour and 47 minutes because I recorded it. That's how long I know it was. And so you see what he chose to extract out of my interview and put in the end of the article. I did say that. We talked about, hey, there's an easy way to stop this. If you're confronted by the police, submit to lawful authority, sort it out later, but let's not hold court in the streets. So, yeah.
Okay. And you referenced Britt London is the vice president of PLEA, soon to become president, by the way. So it's good to have you as well
Thank
in
you.
Here.
Let me see. There we go. I wanted to react a little bit. Why am I so weird? There we go. I wanted to react a little bit to what you said there, Ken. And again, we've got Ken Crane, the president of the Phoenix Law Enforcement Association, PLEA, which is the main police union here in Phoenix. You know, in this article, you said we all go home safe if everybody remembers this one little word, compliance. And I agree with you. But I'm going to take the opposite approach to that.
Okay.
Not complying with an officer does not mean I should be shot does not mean that I should be taken to the ground. And I'm using some extreme examples here to prove my point. But not complying doesn't mean that that is why we're seeing 41 officer-involved shootings in Phoenix. Do you agree with that statement or no?
Well, I agree with you partially. And let me just say that – and so saying that – If we comply, everybody has a better chance of going home safe. Well, there's truth in that statement.
Sure,
now, to your point, when we come up to somebody, if I say, sir, step out of the car. Well, why? Why do I have to? You know, am I going to pull him? Am I going to shoot him? No, I hope not. I mean, that's a little bit excessive there, and somebody's going to lose their job and go to prison, as they should. However, in the police world, and this is borne out by Supreme Court case law, when we come in contact, we have a right to control that scene or situation or scenario. We have the right to order you out of your car. We have the right to order you back into your car if you get out of the car. And so we have a philosophy that we train people. It's called ask, tell, make. I'm going to ask you.
Okay.
Then I'm going to tell you. And then I'm going to make you. Okay, to control
the
situation.
The escalation, if you will, the steps you go through.
Correct. Now, sometimes that means I'm going to open your door and help you get out of the car and guide you over and go, listen, I need you to sit right here, right now, okay? You're being detained. And sometimes, and usually when it's to the point, this is sometimes where it gets a little dicey, where we try to do this, and then people start struggling, resisting, fighting against us. And under the law, you can't do that.
Right.
I want to introduce again, who's in studio with us again. We're talking to Ken Crane, the president of PLEA. Sitting next to him is Britt London, the vice president. And can I bring it back to this a little bit? Because I want to what I'm trying to understand, and this gets into kind of this root of this issue and some of the statements that have been made back and forth. Can you help us understand is there something unique
What's going on?
About Phoenix that's caused 41 officer-involved shootings? And I just keep bringing up more than New York, more than Chicago,
more than
Los Angeles. Is there something unique about Phoenix proper?
So nobody knows. That's the $64,000 question. That's why the chief wants to do the study. Now, to that point, I'll bring up a few points that I made here previously, and I had written an article a while back. We posted on our website. It's still there. I can even give you a copy. And I said, let's talk about a lot of contributing factors to why I think we're seeing this spike in violence. So in a nutshell, we have understaffing. We turned hiring off for 6 years. We got dangerously understaffed. Chief Williams came to town, had to strip 150 detectives out of their jobs and 15 supervisors and put them on the front lines. That's a department in crisis, okay? Is there a greater chance for violence between an officer and a citizen who is a bad guy if one shows up or if three shows up? okay, less chance if three cops show up because they go, they calculate the odds and go, okay, I'm not going to fight today. So when you're understaffed, you got a lot more cops running into calls maybe without backups. One of four border states, violent drug and human smuggling traffic that come across the border. We have a growing transient and homeless population.
But doesn't San Diego have some of these same issues? This is a city that is about the same size as Phoenix.
El Paso?
And they're not seeing the same numbers as we are here in Phoenix.
Correct. And so
it's probably not one thing. It's a combination of things. Yes, I can acknowledge that.
I can go through a litany of reasons.
Fair enough.
And so, and I won't.
No, I
won't continue to bore you.
We have a time constraint.
Yeah. And so, I'm sure when the chief came in, she talked about numbers.
Yep.
And so, 35 out of the 41, we are up against people with guns.
Had a gun. Now, I asked the chief specifically about this. Did all 35 of those people brandish a weapon or threaten an officer with it? And she said, that is not a true statement to say every single one of them did. And my argument back was, in Arizona, in the city of Phoenix, we got a heck of a lot of people that carry guns. Is that in and of itself part of the problem?
I don't think so, because the vast majority of people out there that are carrying concealed weapons are law-abiding citizens. You have to go through a background check to carry a concealed weapon, to get a permit. You got to get fingerprinted. You've got a lot of law-abiding folks carrying guns.
Sure.
You have people that maybe are mentally unstable that get a gun, or criminal elements that get one off the street. And let's say they're not brandishing the weapon at a cop, but maybe another citizen.
And okay? Police have to intervene with that, obviously.
Absolutely. We have to keep the citizenry safe. So you have 35 of those. And to that point, let me just digress. Mr. Offel called me Friday for some final follow-up, and he goes, is there a rule that the police officers must give a warning before they pull the trigger? I said, no. We don't have a specific policy that states that's a dangerous policy to have, because things can erupt in a tenth of a second where you have to react, and a warning's not feasible.
Using that warning takes away your reaction time.
Correct. It can. I said, but now let's talk about it logically. Most times when an officer has their gun out, what are you going to hear them saying if you're out close proximity? Get on the ground, drop the gun, drop the knife, blah, blah, blah. You're going to hear all this stuff being given 99% of the time. There might be rare instances where we can't give the warning. Going down to the stats, I'm sure she told you this, four people had edged weapons, knives that were threatening.
But threatening is one thing. I understand, I don't want to be an officer, and I have the most respect for individuals who wear the badge every single day. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
That being said, having a gun on you while not threatening an officer or anyone else, or having a weapon on you like a knife but not threatening, I think that we might be doing people a disservice by not breaking those numbers out, because it's easy to say of the 41 officer-involved shootings, 35 people had a gun and four had knives. But how many of those actually were attacking or trying to hurt an officer or someone else?
Pretty much all of them, because it's not illegal to walk down the street with a knife and a scabbard.
Correct.
Or a gun in a holster.
Correct.
We don't do that.
But you can carry concealed in
absolutely.
Phoenix as well.
Absolutely. We don't engage people with lethal force for just carrying a knife or a handgun. Okay, these are people that are showing active aggression against third party citizens or officers and failing to comply, and it escalates to the point where somebody goes, if I don't pull the trigger, somebody's going to get bad hurt by this dude.
Yeah.
That's what's happening out there.
Okay, listen, can you stick
around? I'm just
around?
Doing clarification.
No, that's great, and we appreciate it.
I get passionate about it.
As well you should, for goodness sakes. Yeah, we want you to hold on. We're going to continue this discussion.
Okay.
That's Ken Crane. He's the president of PLEA, the Phoenix Law Enforcement Officers Association. Did I get that right? Yeah. So that's the union for the police officers. And we want to continue that discussion as we react to and try to get a handle on specifically what's going on in the city of Phoenix when it comes to officer and civilian interaction and why more and more shots are being fired. That conversation continues next on Arizona's News Station.
Bruce St. James and Pamela Hughes.
And Ken Crane, the president of PLEA, the Phoenix Police Officers Union, in studio with us as we continue to react to and, trying to understand as much as can be understood why the increase, a twofold increase in the number of officer-involved shootings in the city of Phoenix this year.
We're at 41 right now, a record.
Hopefully we won't get to 42.
But Ken, you have worked the streets for many years in your career. You talk to officers who are on these streets day in, day out.
Right.
While we're waiting for this report, and it'll be coming out next year, you guys are the boots on the ground. You're talking to these men and women.
Right.
What are they telling you is one of the indicators as to why we're seeing these numbers?
What's different? Yeah.
I think here's the reason, and don't ask me to explain why this is happening. We seem to have we've got a lot of seriously mentally ill people that are just out roaming the streets. Okay, they're transient homeless, a lot of mentally ill, a lot of people on drugs, street drugs, psych drugs, and not only that, you have an increasingly growing segment of the small segment, but a militant anarchist subset of the population that is out
troublemakers.
There. Sure. I mean, look at recent city council meetings, the Trump rally. I mean, so there's these groups out there, and you run into folks like that that think it's their duty, job, obligation to oppose the police, resist the police, fight with police.
And that's newer, saying. Those groups are newer?
Yeah, and encourage that type of activity like it's some kind of God-given right, I guess. And so all these things, you pour them into this cauldron, this melting pot, where you got this stew, if you will, of all these variables. So it's hard to come out and go, here's the one magic reason why we are up at 41.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah. Ken, thank you so much for your time today. We appreciate it.
Yeah, let me just close with this.
Please.
Let me tell you this. No officer on the street starts their shift hoping they can pull the trigger. Our men and women on the streets have the most skin in the game. They're the ones that roll out the gate every day and go, man, I hope it's a good shift today.
Chief Williams said something similar. Nobody wants to be involved in an officer-involved shooting. That's not how they go to it. Well, we appreciate your time today. We appreciate Chief Williams' time today. That's Ken Crane, the president of PLEA. Phoenix Police Chief Williams with us. If you missed any of this, you can go back and listen to it on the podcast through KTAR, right? Hey, we're thankful. We got DJ Tommy Two-Tone over there, super producer Stevie Z, and Ashley Flood.